got a wild heart. It's just like the wild wind, beating so madly for somebody new. You've got a wild heart, but my eyes are too dim, crying so sadly and all over you. I thought your heart was beating like my own, but you were looking round while I stayed home. And so your heart's gone wild with ecstasy. Another love now takes the place of me. You've got a wild heart. It's just like the wild wind, beating so madly for somebody new. You've got a wild heart, but my eyes are too dim, crying so sadly and all over you. Lonesome soul for quite some time, but someday all my tears will fall behind, and someone else will make my heart go wild. And maybe once again I'll learn to smile. You've got a wild heart. It's just like the wild wind, beating so madly for somebody new. You've got a wild heart, but my eyes are tear-dimmed, crying so sadly and all over you.
You were just listening to Wild Heart, a song written by Lynn Rusbrum and recorded by Lance Rusbrum on his 2015 album Self Portrait. Lance describes it as having a Bakersfield sound with lots of twang and a shuffle beat. Lance takes care of lead vocals and rhythm guitar, and also had Al Widmeyer playing bass, lead, and baritone guitars, Grant Haywood on drums, and Guylaine Basque and Kathy Kirker on vocal harmony. Hi, it's Steve Todd. And today on Musicians FAQ, we'll be listening to part 3, the final segment on Lance Rusbrum's musical journey. In parts 1 and 2, we learned a lot about his father Lynn's musical legacy, Lance starting music with his dad's band, the Hummingbirds, and how Lance branched out on his own with his own bands. In today's episode, we'll hear more about Lance's recordings, solo performances, and the Elmira Sunday Night Concert Series. Let's check in with Lance as he discusses his album, Self Portrait. Why don't we get into your album? Because I know your album has some of your dad's songs and then some of your own tunes. And this is probably, now we're probably jumping ahead quite a bit, right?
That would be 2014, 2015.
Okay.
My dad sold a bunch of records off and he decided that I should have a CD. I was amenable to that. Even in the 70s, that was the one thing I really did get excited about with the Hummingbirds, was making that album at RCA Studios. And I thought, I was just fascinated by the whole studio thing. Again, I'm still a little bit, you know, I'm not a showman type and I'm not driven to perform for people. I have just as much fun working in the studio. So I got to admit, under COVID, I haven't suffered that much because I haven't been making a living at music or anything, but I'm learning how to do a lot of musical stuff.
Sure.
That I haven't had time to do before.
Yeah, the neat thing about, I don't know where I heard this, but a musician has to be an introvert and an extrovert, because you're an introvert at home when you're practicing and learning all this recording stuff, but then you have to be the extrovert on the stage, right? So
One thing I will always remember along those lines was many years ago, probably as far back as the 70s, there was a TV series called The Music of Man. don't know if you remember that. It was about all types of music. It was like a CBC production or something. Yeah. And it was a mini series. And one show, they got exactly into that issue about the two types of musicians. And they had two examples. One was Yehudi Menuhin, who's one of the, at that time, he was considered the world's greatest violinist. He played with Berlin Philharmonic with Herbert von Karajan and all that as a violin player. And the other was Glenn Gould.
Oh, really? Okay.
The famous Canadian. And Glenn Gould is famous for not wanting to go out in public. He's been dead for years too, but he was one of the greatest interpreters of Bach in the world at the time, and he would. So anyway, they had both Menuhin and Glenn Gould on the same show, and Menuhin was an extrovert, and he loved playing in front of people. Even though he played with the big symphony orchestras of the world, they caught him somehow. He was in Quebec playing at a hoedown with a bunch of Quebecois fiddlers. Here's the greatest classical violinist in the world, and they're stomping away playing hoedown music, French-Canadian style fiddle. And he was having a great time, you know, and he was going on about how he can't live without the energy coming back from the fans and all that. And then it cut to Glenn Gould, who said, I hate going out in front of people. I like to, but I can make everything perfect in the studio. I can, you can never be perfect live, but in the studio, I can be perfect. So only perfection ever gets out. And I got to admit, they're both perfectly valid viewpoints. Even though I tend towards, I guess, the nerdy Glenn Gould side, you know, I certainly am not immune to having a crowd go wild when you're playing, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing like having the, even to be on the stage and just feeling the, like the vibration of the bass guitar or something coming at you. Like, it's just amazing.
But I'm not the type of guy that, you know, I've been, another story, I was at a party years and years ago, and there was this local country musician, I didn't know him, but he was playing all night at this party and singing, and we were sitting there listening at all that. A week later, he came out to a bar where I was playing in town. He said, you were sitting in front of me all night and you didn't even say you were a musician or come out. And I said, you were doing perfectly fine. You know, at a party, I'd rather hang around and socialize than play all night. Anyway, that's just the way I am. But, you know, I do love music. I got to admit, the thing about music is even when I haven't played, when you're going through hard times and stuff, I'll pick up my guitar and play for a couple of hours and I always feel way better.
Oh, yeah, you know, for sure.
I do love music, and I, you know, I love the history of it. I love the way it intertwines, you know. But so anyway, and that's part of my CD, you know, getting into that. When Dad said he'd back a CD for me, I thought, you know what, I've always had a desire to make a, like, I do like the retro stuff, the authentic stuff. So, you know, I decided to do about a third my songs, a third Dad's songs, and a third other people's songs, you know, country songs. Classics, you know.
For sure.
But most of the music is real country. We're talking Hank Williams and Jim Reeves and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Let's listen to a song called The Girl in the Blue Flame Cafe, written by Lynn Rusburm, but recorded by both Lynn and Lance. The first version we'll hear is sung by Lynn on his 2012 album, Singing My Songs. Lynn sang and played bass and guitar and had Bob Tremblay on dobro and flat top guitar, Doug Dietrich on pedal steel, Jerry Smith on fiddle, Grant Haywood on drums, and Lance Rusburm and Guy Lane Basque on backup vocals. The second version is on Lance's 2015 self-ported album and features Dan Hallett on fiddle, Mike Weber on pedal steel, Grant Haywood on drums, and rhythm guitar and stand-up bass by Lynn Rusburm.
I see her there where the music is loud, where they swing and they sway in the church of the crowd. One among many who live just for play, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. But there's sadness in her eyes that she's trying to disguise. There's something driving her, making her go. It's a sad recollection of sorrow and woe. Someone who left her alone by the way, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. Thank you. trying to smile when the world wants her to. But it's so hard to smile just for something to do. Making believe that he'd come back her way, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. But there's sadness in her eyes that she's trying to disguise. He's in her heart all the time she's in there. She can picture his features in each empty chair. Heartless is he who would treat her that way, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. The girl in the Blue Flame Cafe.
I see her there where the music is loud, where they swing and they sway with the surge of the crowd. One among many who lives just for play, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. But there's sadness in her eyes that she's trying to disguise. There's something driving her, making her go. It's a sad recollection of someone she's known, someone who left her alone by the way, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. Smile when the world wants her to, but it's so hard to smile just for something to do. Making believe that he'll come back her way, the girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. But there's sadness in her eyes that she's trying to disguise. He's in her heart all the time she's in there. She can picture his features in each empty chair. What kind of man would ever treat her that way? The girl in the Blue Flame Cafe. The girl in the Blue Flame Cafe.
Hi, I'm Doug Dietrich from Waterloo, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS, RadioWaterloo.ca.
We're back. It's Steve Todd, and thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ. Let's return to our interview with Lance Ressler as he discusses the making of his album, Self-Portrait.
You know, so I wanted to do a nice version of a lot of the old stuff from the 50s, but with modern recording, you can do it better. And a few times, it was done at, there's a guy named Eric Durston. He works at the local Long and McQuaid, and he has a nice little studio in his basement.
Really?
Paul Weber's been doing a lot of stuff there, and like, Dad was taking a lot of his country stuff there. And he's not, he's a really good engineer. He's much younger than my daughter's age, but he likes all kinds of music. I know he liked heavy metal and stuff, but he's a really good engineer. You know, I remember in the past I'd worked and the engineer would say, oh, that's good enough. Let's finish it up, you know, because they were getting bored. Eric would say, no, you could do it better than that. Let's do it one more time,
do it another couple times.
He had infinite patience because an album like that is really made in the mixing. I decided to use local musicians, but good ones. You know, I wanted the best guys I could get, but sometimes you'd make a decision, like some of the guitar work, we're thinking, we could hire Steve Patico for that. And then everybody who's listening probably knows Steve Patico probably one of the best country guitar players, bar none, in North America. Yeah. You know, he can hold his own with the top Nashville guys and all that. But they decided not to because he might draw attention to him, you know. Like a lot of artists, it's prestige to have his name on your record. you know, it's almost like I thought that would detract from the rest of it. It was all about balance, you know. So, but you know, the musicians I got were all, you know, really good local musicians. Yeah, but I think the key to that was the mixing of that, you know, knowing who to use when, which is that's producing when you're making a CD.
It's funny because I actually listened to it without knowing who was on it. And I thought, wow, who is that fiddle player on there? And it was Dan Howland from that I've seen at the commercial.
Yes.
And then you had Al Widmeyer playing quite a bit of instruments.
Al's all over this. Yeah, Al was right there from he's the guy I had sitting right on that same couch here before we did the CD. And yeah, I knew Al a little bit from the Barn Dance stuff, but not very well. And he wasn't sure what I wanted him here for at first and all that. But then I started telling him my idea was to do real country music, meaning retro.
It's awesome.
And do it authentically.
For sure.
And there's 20 songs on there, which is a lot. You know, a lot of CDs only have 10 or 12 songs on it. But every song I tried to make different. Like, if you listen to it carefully, a lot of them are all... There's two songs that are rockabilly. You know, they're a little bit the Sun sound from the early 50s. One song is a Jim Reeves feel. One song... You know, they're not Jim Reeves songs. They're my own or Dad's or whatever. One song I wanted to sound like Buck Owens, you know. Yep. So Al played that twangy style Telecaster. Right. And, of course, for Dan, you know, he was dynamite on
that. Oh, it sounded great.
The intro to the Ray Price, A Girl in the Night, exactly like Ray Price's band, you know. Yep. And Dan... One of the reasons I wanted him is because I'd seen Paul play up in one of my dad's Elmira shows.
Yeah.
And he was with Paul Weber filling in. And he played some really dynamite mandolin.
Yeah.
And I really liked his mandolin playing as well as fiddle. Yeah. So on the song It's a Living, which sort of the most popular song on the CD, it's kind of it has a real Waylon Jennings outlaw feel, but I wanted an angry violin solo.
Okay.
And Dan did like a la Copperhead Road or something like that. You know, like a little tiny mandolin can sound angry.
Yeah.
And Dan did it on that solo, great. You know.
We're going to listen to It's a Living, written by Lance Rusburm and Jerry Beaupre. From Lance's description of the song on his website, he mentions that Jerry and Lance used to play together way back in the 80s and collaborated on several songs, but nothing was ever done with any of those music projects. When Lance was considering songs for the self-portrait album, he dug out It's a Living and found that he was drawn to the words describing the plight of the working man who despises the job he must go to. In this version, he added a classic outlaw sound to Jerry's lyrics. I encourage you to check out Lance Rusburm online, where you can not only learn more about Lance's music, but also explore the many beautiful works of art that Lance has created.
Another Monday morning, and I wake up to the old clock radio. My job is waiting for me, but I don't want to go. I lay there for a minute before I drag my tired bones out of the bed. I've got a lifetime mortgage to be paid and a family to be fed. I know I'm gonna be late, but I pour a second coffee anyway. My foreman's waiting for me, I can imagine what he'll say. I guess I'd better get to work so I can make some money for a man who doesn't even know my name. If I died, he wouldn't give a damn. It's a living, not much, but it's better than the unemployment line. And this living is enough, drive a working man out of his mind. Thank you. walk inside and punch the clock that tells me that I'm half an hour late. The man comes charging at me like a wild bull from his gate. But I've made up a good excuse that he'll believe so he won't fire me. I'm dreaming of the day I'd quit my job if I should win the lottery. Fat chance. It's a living, not much, but it's better than the unemployment line. And this living is enough to drive a working man out of his mind. It's a living, not much, but it's better than the unemployment line. And this living is enough to drive a working man out of his mind. Take it home, boys.
Greg and Earl, Priest from the Chaparrals, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS, RadioWaterloo.ca.
I think Al played a baritone violin. Is that a...
A baritone guitar.
Or baritone, sorry. Is that a seven-string guitar, or is that just sort of
nope.
Tall tune?
It's regular, but tuned lower.
Okay, so the low, you have like a low B or something
yeah.
like that, or...
Yeah, and again, until I did this CD, I wasn't aware that they're used a lot in recording, and you don't realize it.
Yeah.
I think that's just a Telecaster. Like, it was a Dan Electro guitar, but okay. It sounded just like a Tele.
And you probably
but
have a
lower.
Yeah, and you could probably do a lot of that, like, real, like, bow, bow. Like, that almost that Dwight Yoakam...
Yeah, exactly. For that... Yeah, one of the songs there, I specifically wanted to sound like a Dwight Yoakam song,
yeah.
And that's the one he uses it.
Okay.
On. Yeah.
Awesome.
And, you know, so that's what we were trying to do, is every song I wanted something, like one of the songs, I admit when I wrote it, it was kind of, I wanted to write a song like an early British invasion song,
really?
To kind of get a bit of my
yeah.
rock and roll
yeah,
roots
for sure.
in there. So I wanted to write something that sounded like, and I was deliberately going after the sound that the Rolling Stones had on
okay.
Because You Used to Love Her, but it's all
yeah,
over
yeah,
now. You
yeah.
know that song?
Yeah, it's actually, that's a fairly, they,
yeah.
That's almost a sloppy, when you listen to that.
Oh, the song is really sloppy.
Yeah.
You listen to it now, you know, because
yeah.
the standards, you know, but it works on that song.
Yeah,
so also
sure.
I wanted that type of a sound.
That's awesome.
So we started working in the studio, and Eric turns to me and says, you can't sing that kind of stuff. That's what a good... engineer you wanted
yeah,
to tell you
for sure.
the truth. He says, you're a crooner, you have
yeah.
a smoother voice, you can't get the anger that Mick Jagger had in that song, you know. And I said
yeah.
you're right, but we had the song half done, and you know, I didn't know what to do with it. So all the time we're doing the record, we just let it sit there until the very end. And
yeah.
then one night I had one of those flashes of inspiration that you hear about.
Yeah.
We had the drum tracks done, we had the bass done. Anyway, I thought that song would work as a bluegrass song. And then I thought about it. So sure enough, I called Al up, and Al came in and played most of the instruments. He plays mandolin, flat picking guitar, and fiddle.
Oh, you're kidding.
He
okay.
added all this to the song that I was going to have, like, you know, Beatles style
okay.
electric
wow,
rhythm.
That's
so
neat.
We took
yeah.
that off. So we left the drums on, which is not bluegrass. Purists wouldn't like
yeah.
that. But we added we got Larry Johnson. It turned into a bluegrass song. It's a novelty song, too.
Yeah.
It's about a guy
yeah.
that's got his own girlfriend just because his girlfriend's cheating on him. So
okay.
he's doing it, too, you know.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah.
And,
that's the amazing thing about being in a studio, though, because you can just kind of pivot that fast, right, where you have one idea at the beginning and then
Well, if you have total control. And as I said, Dad was just, some of the things you'd go, I don't know if I agree with that, but it's your call, you know. Yeah. So he did it. And Dad's always been open-minded. He didn't mind if I'd slip in a Jimi Hendrix lick into a country song, you know, back in the old days or something. But not that I did that a lot, but...
My baby loves to live beyond our means all the time. That woman's never happy till she spend my last dime. So I took to working late to make ends meet, while she took her lovin' to the bar down the street. She must think I'm stupid when she tries to put me on. She don't know that I know what she does when she's gone. I finally found my own way to even the score. I used to suffer, but I don't do that no more.
He's got his own piece of action on the other side of town, just to see her reaction
when the gossip gets around. I got a blue-eyed beauty with jet black hair. She's willing and she's waiting for the good times we share. We hang out in honky-tonks and sleazy motels. I hope my baby finds out and goes through hell.
He's got his own piece of action on the other side of town, just to see her reaction
when the gossip gets around. And there's been a lot of talk. When rumors reach my baby, she's gonna get a shock. When she thinks I'm working, she'll hear I'm really gone, 'cause I've got something to fall back on.
He's got his own piece of action on the other side of town, just to see her reaction
when the gossip gets around. Gets around. Around.
My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. My baby gets around, that gossip gets around. Gets around,
my
baby gets
around.
Yeah. The one name I don't know is Mike Eady on piano.
He's the guy that plays with Mike Weber in the house band at Maryhill. He's the guy who would play piano with.
Okay.
I don't know if he was always with Paul Weber.
Yep.
Sorry, did I say Mike Weber? Paul Weber's house band at Maryhill.
Okay.
So that's who he was.
Yeah, I might have crossed paths with him, but I don't think so.
So, yeah, we got him to fill out a few songs.
Great.
And,
okay.
But it was mainly, so I got to say, Al had more input than anybody. Because.
And you had Grant Haywood on drums, and then he did a little bit of vocals too?
Grant and Al, we got together doing, they worked together on vocals on a couple
that's
of them,
great.
And harmonizing.
Yep.
They've got a nice Jordan Ayers thing happening on one of the rockabilly tunes, still doing those, you know, just ahs and oohs and all that. And that song, the bluegrass one, that's that's those
that's
two.
Great.
So they're doing that. Yeah, there's two girls on there.
Yeah, did they ever sound nice?
Dad had worked with on a bluegrass band.
Yeah.
What I asked them to do, it, they were like, well, we're straight old-time country. I said, oh, I want you to do background vocals. And they said, well, we can't do that. We just do like old-time country harmony. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'll just tell you what to do. So I just go through it with them and say, I can hear
amazing.
This here and there. And a few times we did a few very subtle effects in the studio.
Yep.
Like we add like kind of a chorusy effect on some of their vocals to give them more of that. You know, I'd worked with the Lori Bower Singers back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And to get their absolute state of the art, you know, back then in the 70s, I remember it cost us like $450 in the 70s to get the Lori Bauer singers come in to do four songs. That's what you were allowed by the musicians' union rules to do in one session. Okay. You know, so four of them would come in. There were 16 channels in those days. They'd come in never having heard of you or who you are or anything, never having heard your songs, of course. They'd hear the songs once. The second time, they're humming along in perfect four-part harmony.
Yeah.
And then if there'd be a couple tracks left over, they'd add more tracks to it. So we'd add whatever tracks were left over, the Lori Bauer singers would fill up. And so, you know, we kind of did that with these two girls here.
No, it sounded great.
Got some nice, especially on Cast a Lonesome Shadow, I have some really nice. I wanted kind of a... in deference to Hank's original version, I wanted a little bit of a sinister sound.
Yeah.
I got some nice stuff
that's
out
great.
Of them, you know.
Good
so,
for you.
So it's a matter of, that's what I'm proudest of on this CD is doing the production, is hearing that this should be here and how do we get that? Okay. We laid down the bed tracks, I think it was in January, and then by next January we were in the middle of mixing it, and it came out in around July, but unfortunately, the unfortunate thing was I was trying to get a band together, and I was hoping we'd go out and push this CD, and that's when Dad got really sick.
Yeah.
He passed away just after the CD came out, so we never had a chance to go out and do any promoting or anything.
Okay. But at least he got to hear it, though.
But fortunately, he got to hear it finished. Yeah, and he even had it in the hospital when he was sick. You know, he'd be playing it, so he was quite proud of it, and I'm proud that he was proud of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but it took the better part of 2 years because, I remember certain people couldn't make it and then there are certain things, there'd be the recording guy couldn't, Eric's studio wasn't available.
Yeah. Well, and as an artist too, you get commissioned to do something and all your focus is on art, right?
Well, this was for the last almost 20 years, I was actually working regularly, but part-time at a store called the Spitfire Emporium up in Victoria.
Yep. Okay.
Sell aviation model building supplies and all that. Okay, they're closing it down this year, so I retired when COVID hit.
Okay.
So, but I only worked at that for 3 days a week, which was a good arrangement because that way I always knew the phone was paid and all this, but the other 3 days of the week I could be working on things like spending a whole day in the studio working on this or working on art of my own.
Yeah,
whatever.
So busy.
So, so between the two, you know, but yeah, I like to work in long sessions in the studio. Like we had a few days where we'd come in at like 10 o'clock in the morning and work till 8 o'clock at night in the studio.
Every evening when the sun goes down, I sit here in my room. The lamplight streaming o'er me projects my lonely gloom. My counterpart in agony mocks each tear that falls, and I cast a lonesome shadow on these lonely, lonely walls. He's always by my side at night, no matter where I go. He lurks out in the darkness or in the neon's glow. He follows me across the steps, up and down the halls, and I cast a lonesome shadow on these lonely, lonely walls. I sit and watch the candle and the flicker of the flame. My writhing shadow twists and turns as though he is in pain. I'm trying to escape the memory my heart recalls, and I cast a lonesome shadow on these lonely, lonely walls. Things I planned are as empty as the bottle that I hold in my hand. My soul is buried in the depths of love and life's pitfalls, and I cast a lonesome shadow on these lonely, lonely walls. I cast a lonesome shadow on these lonely, lonely walls.
Now, did your dad do any, did he cut any of the instruments at all, or was he just kind of listening and...
He wasn't, he was playing bass for some, but most of it we redid.
Okay.
Yeah, we wanted some, like, real, we wanted a real stand-up bass for the rockabilly songs. And Eric dug up a guy who wasn't playing with anybody. He's a young guy that's just learning it.
Yeah.
And he comes in, wouldn't accept a ride. He comes, takes the bus with a stand-up bass. Anyway, he came to the studio. He did a really great job with a slap rockabilly bass.
Okay. That's,
you know, that's great. I'd love to find somebody locally that can play that, but I don't know of any of the local bass players that do that style, you know, that aren't playing rockabilly already.
Yeah, for sure.
But what I did get Dad to do, a couple of the songs, especially the swingier ones, I got him to play the rhythm guitar.
Oh, great. Okay.
Because it's surprisingly hard to play proper swing-style rhythm guitar. I'm too erratic. I'm too choppy because I work by myself too much, where my rhythm varies and all that. You know, but when in the studio, you want really even, absolute regular. And I know Dad and I went to a country music festival back in 2014 down in the States, and where people jam with each other and there's all kinds of stuff going on. And one of the well-known country band from Kentucky, their rhythm guitar player couldn't make it, and somehow Dad ended up filling in with them. And this guy was asking for Dad because nobody plays rhythm guitar like that anymore. You know, like really solid, chunky, you know.
Okay.
He learned that back with Johnny Sisca and the Western Airs back in 1950.
You know? Yeah.
They didn't have drums in those days in music. So you needed a really solid rhythm guitar.
Yeah. You know? I've been recording myself recently, and I noticed how bad my strumming is because I'll have a drum track and then I record my guitar. And then when I listen back to my guitar, I can't believe how hard it is to line up with the drums. Because I'm on the backbeat or I'm not even.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, I remember Larry once saying to me, you know, you don't need to, in the old days, the rhythm guitar had to put down the rhythm for the band. But now the drums are putting down the rhythm. So at the rhythm guitar, you just kind of scrub it. It's just making a wall of sound in A. You don't want a doom chuck doom chuck. You just want a you know, really, it's really subtle, but it's, you know, so I've learned a lot over the years. I keep mentioning Larry Mercy told me this because I have learned a lot off him over the years, you know.
Wow.
Even though, as I said, I didn't impress him with my drive in my younger days. I take my non-country friends out to hear them all the time in the 70s at local bars, and they'd be impressed because they, you know, because they were a very tight, you know.
Here's one of Lance's originals off his self-portrait album. This one is called Get Rhythm, We're All Boppin' the Blues. Lance has a page on his website where he describes each song, and in this case, this is Lance's tribute to the early rockabilly sound of the Sun Records in the 50s. He also mentions that this tune is more than a little autobiographical. Lance takes care of lead and backup vocals, acoustic rhythm, and finger-picked electric guitar, and got Barry Klein for the electric lead solo, Al Widmeyer for the second electric guitar and background vocals, Jay Carruthers for the slap upright bass, and Grant Haywood for the drums and backup vocals. Here's Get Rhythm, We're All Boppin' the Blues.
My dad had a band in the 50s. They played hillbilly hits of the day. The first music I remember was Hank Williams. He started me on down that lost highway. Between Tupelo and Memphis, hillbilly met the blues. Sam and Dewey came along and spread the news. A generation looking for a new beat, and they got Get Rhythm, We're All Boppin' the Blues. It's alright, mama, 'cause I walk the line. I'm dancing in my blue suede shoes. There's a whole lot of shaking going on in town tonight. Get rhythm, we're all bopping the blues.
Mm-hmm.
came to Nashville, country music went uptown. Rock and roll went to Vegas for a while. But people want the sound, and it all comes back around. Get rhythm, we're all bopping the blues. It's all right, Ma, 'cause I walk the line. I'm dancing in my blue suede shoes. There's a whole lot of shaking going on in town tonight. Get rhythm, we're all bopping the blues. Get rhythm, we're all bopping the blues.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your Elmira, because I know that's been a big thing over probably several years, right?
Like yeah, that's Elmira. Dad started that, I think, would this have been the 13th year? I know at some point it was 12 years, like okay. Right last year. Dad started it up at the little park in Elmira, just a little gazebo there. And I know there was a few shows that the town would put on. They'd have a bunch of bands, and Dad would play there with the Jamboree reunion band that he was with at the time, or he had a bluegrass band that he worked with. It kind of went over, and I don't know. I guess Dad, right from the start, went to the township and got permission. You'd have to get the power turned on in the band yeah. shell and everything.
Well, he had porta potties at some point, too. And
yeah, stuff. Yeah. So what I'm saying, what I'm wondering is, for the first, you know, did they start out just walking up to the gazebo and start playing there, you know? Yeah. But I think right from the start, they went to the township and, I don't know if they had the porta potties even at the very start.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably not.
Ultimately, they ended up doing it with the full consent of the town, which is great because, at one time, Dad came to me and said, oh my God, we got to stop the Elmira shows because there's insurance requirements. Somebody says, you know, what if somebody falls while one of our shows on, we're responsible. But by that time, the shows were doing good enough already. The township realized that this is a really good thing. What else does Elmira have going on regularly that's really good?
Well, you're drawing people from Kitchener, Waterloo, and... Probably.
Well, back in those days, probably not so much. But, you know, they probably got hundreds of people back then. But for just around the time Dad got sick, and then I started helping him out with it and later ultimately taking it over. But around that time, Dad started getting some better quality bands. And when popular bands would come there, that we packed that little park. It's a tiny little sliver of a park. But in the last year we played, we were routinely getting... 500 to 1,200 people there in that little tiny park. Yep. I mean, you got up to 1,200. That was Paul Weber's band drew that kind. Yep. Naomi Bristow draws like that. Some of the more popular bands, they actually shut off the road informally. It's just people plunking their lawn chairs down on the side road.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I was worried, what if the cops see this? They're going to shut us down. But one day a cop did stop, and he was standing there watching the show, and I went over, is there a problem? No, I was just wondering what was going on, and I'm enjoying the show.
Yeah.
And, of course, the township is behind this, so, you know, they don't mind, and it's obvious what's happening there, so people don't need to use that little stretch. So, so anyway, we've gotten some huge crowds there, and we take up collections to pay the bands, which means that if it pours, the poor band doesn't get paid anything. But if you do well, they make way better money than they would playing a bar.
Just the exposure to play for 1,000 people.
Like, yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
And where else, a lot of the bands, especially the real country bands, you know, where do you get to play to a real appreciative, you know, it's a concert, so they're actually applauding. You know, they pay attention to every word you say, you know. After all those years of playing bars, I know you're competing against the hockey game on the big screen TV. Yeah. Or
often at a bar, people just want to get into a fight. Or
guys are yelling at you. Yeah. Shut up, I can't hear the score.
Now, I heard the Freeze, the Chaparral's gave me a recording from Elmira, and I couldn't believe how good the sound was, so I don't know.
That was me.
Yeah, I don't know what you were doing. I don't know if they recorded off the board or off an iPad or something. But
It was my little Zoom.
Unbelievable quality.
Those little Zoom cameras you can get.
Okay.
Although usually I can't get a good sound there. I'm always jealous of people with cell phones get better recordings than I do. But with the Chaparrals, see, the thing is, the Zoom camera, it's meant for musicians. It's meant for things like that, but it's a really wide-angle lens. So it's meant to be real close. But if you get real close, you're behind the main speakers.
Yeah, for sure.
So you don't get the proper voice sound. You're getting more of the stage sound off the monitors. That's not well mixed, right?
Yeah.
It usually doesn't work, but somehow with the Chaparrals, I had the cameras set well back, so they're not close. Like, That's the drawback is I had to go in front of the front of house speakers, and I got a good sound. But usually I'm always struggling. Where do I put this little camera here now? You know, really I should plug in a mic and have the mic somewhere totally different than the camera.
Then you start getting people talking and everything.
But yeah,
But anyway, the quality of the that recording was unbelievable.
Yeah, so. That one just happened to work very well. Another one that worked well was Naomi Bristow and Steve Patico.
Yeah.
Because she uses one of those Shure... the Bose speaker system.
Oh, those are great,
That I have.
They're amazing.
Inherited from my dad, the one with the pole.
Yep. They're incredible.
With that one, you can get close because that's the main speaker and it's behind them. So I can put this camera right in their face. So I got them as far away as you and I.
That was just a duet then?
Yeah.
That would have been incredible then.
Oh, I've got good footage. There's some on, we have a website on Facebook for the Elmira shows. If you scroll down far enough, you might find some Naomi Bristow.
Yeah.
Here's a live recording from the Elmira Sunday Night Concert Series. Lance took a break from all of his hard work running the event, strapped on an acoustic guitar, and jumped up onto the gazebo stage to sing a few songs for the crowd. In this recording, he is backed up by the Chaparrales, which that night included Greg and Earl Fries, Grant Haywood, Gary Moser, Doug Dietrich, and Daryl Beam. Lance entertained the crowd by singing the 1974 classic, I Never Go Around Mirrors, made popular by Lefty Frizzell, but recorded by many others, including Keith Whitley and Merle Haggard.
I can't stand to see a good man go to waste. One who never combs his hair or shaves his face. A man who leans on wine over love that's told a lie. It just tears me up to see a grown man cry. So I never go around mirrors. I can't stand to see me without you by my side. So I never go around. Got a heartache to I'm try to hide too high. 'Cause I've got a heart too high. Thank you.
Are you still writing a little bit?
I've been doing a little bit now, you know, yeah. Like with all the other stuff, now that I do have a bit more time at home, although I've been getting a lot of art commissions and stuff.
Okay.
So my future, what I was planning before COVID, because I just couldn't find the right musicians to do that retro thing. Everybody yeah. wanted to go out and play either new country or whatever. I started playing a few single jobs and they went really well.
That's great. Okay. Yep.
Ironically, with my voice, like I'd never done that in my life. Again, yeah. being shy, I was a little bit nervous by myself, and I've always worked with a band over decades. It suddenly hit me that my voice works very well in a single because it's actually lower voices don't project that well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying this for the benefit of anybody who's not a musician, but it's harder to project your voice if it's low.
Yeah.
They say in the history of music, that's why in the early 20s and stuff, everybody sang like operatically or really loud
yeah, because the high pitches cut across.
Primitive microphones, that's the only thing that worked. But when new electric microphones came out, that made Bing Crosby possible.
Yeah.
You know, guys that could sing low and intimately like they're sitting right next to you. And Jim Reeves was like that too. Jim Reeves couldn't sing out in a bluegrass jam festival. His low voice wouldn't carry, and my voice is in exactly the same range. Yeah. So I always had trouble carrying. I've got to be really close to the mic. I know sound men always thought I was an egotist, and I'd say, you might want to put my mic up a little bit louder, yeah. and they'd think, oh, some egotist musician just wants to be louder, you yeah. know. But then I start singing, and they, I can't hear him. I've got to turn him up louder.
Yeah.
You know, so Kenny Rogers, too. Okay, Kenny yeah. Rogers, Jim Reeves, all those guys, I sing more in their type yeah. of range. And you got to be really close to the yeah. mic, and it's hard to project.
Yeah, you mentioned Josh Turner earlier in the interview as well.
Yeah, yeah, idea. Doing that
really
song.
Long, yeah.
There's a long doctrine. Yeah. So anyway, so I found when you're playing by yourself without a band, it's great. You can hear yeah. every note, my voice. I could even be back from the mic, which gives you a better sound too.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you do go close to the mic, you get a unnatural boomy effect they call the proximity effect. And
yeah.
anyway, so anyway... My sister talked me into it. She's an artist down near, lives down near Sarnia in a small town. And there's an art community that's thriving in this little town. And they had an arts festival. And she asked me to come and do a concert by myself. And I said, I've never done that. And it went great.
Yeah.
Everybody loved it, you know. And not only that, I did country, but I also stuck in a little bit of James Taylor.
Oh, and, good for you. Okay.
You know, Starry Night by,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Don McLean.
Don McLean, yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, it went really well. So, and then somebody else, an old schoolmate of mine, called me up to do a female, the Probus, a female business association.
Okay, yeah, that's neat.
For female, and they have an annual, and they always have entertainment. Okay. And I went there, and it went really well, too.
Good for you.
And okay. again, they weren't necessarily, you know, they weren't the same people I'm used yep. to playing to, but... It went really well. I played a private party or two, and then I did this Fergus job. And anyway, I find that it's really nice. I was planning to, the obvious place to do that is seniors' homes, because I'd worked a bunch of jobs with Dad at seniors' homes.
Yeah.
They're always looking for music, because there's a million seniors' homes. Baby boomers are aging, so
yep.
they like the same stuff I like in seniors' homes. So, as I said, I played quite a few, and they were pleasant to play, too, because, again, they're your captive audience. They love
it. Oh, they love it. Yeah, for sure.
They're always yep. really nice and appreciative. And so I was ready to start that. I geared up. I've gotten specific equipment, like a particularly nice acoustic
okay.
amp. And
yep.
the Bose, that thing there is the, you know, it's powerful enough to use as a PA and a guitar amp
yep.
for playing very
yeah, and they don't want it really loud anyway at the home.
So I was all geared up to do that, and then COVID hit.
Yeah,
so obviously seniors homes is the last well, place I'll be working
yeah.
now. But
that might be the first things, like maybe not the seniors, but the solo acts and the duos and stuff are probably going to be the first things to come back because
yes.
bars are struggling financially. And
yes.
So that's all they could probably afford. All right, well, it was a real pleasure to get to know you more, Lance. I sure didn't know you much at the beginning, but I know a lot about you and your dad at this point, so thanks a lot.
We've met a few times
yeah.
through you playing with Diane's band at
yep.
our Elmira concerts, but it's nice to get to know you. And
oh, for sure. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, hopefully see you at like, your solo show once everything kind of opens up again.
Yeah, hopefully. I am looking forward to it, even though I said earlier that I do like working on recordings, but I am looking forward to actually playing in front of people and doing stuff that's a little bit different than I've done before.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, we've reached the end of part three of Lance Russwurm's musical journey. I hope you enjoyed all 3 hours discussing Lance's many decades of performing and songwriting, learning more about his father Lynn Russwurm's long music history, and learning about local music events from the past and present, such as the Jamboree Reunion Band and the Elmira Sunday Night Concert Series. Lance, as well as others I've interviewed for Musicians FAQ, have really opened my eyes to the richness and depth of music history in our community. As a musician, I think we're pretty lucky to be living in Waterloo Region with so much music around us. Please drop me a line if you know a musician that might want to be featured on the program, or maybe a theme for an upcoming episode. We're going to finish off the hour with an acoustic recording that Lance did recently. It's the 1969 Steve Winwood Blind Faith classic, Can't Find My Way Home. What a great version of this song. I've always enjoyed playing this one live as well. Till next time, it's Steve Todd, and thank you for listening to Musicians FAQ on 102.7 CKMS.
It's Russ Wareham from Kitchener, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS, RadioWaterloo.ca.